Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, Matt Neely behind the glass, keeping me on time and on target. The purpose of the engagement hours, well, let me go back. The Morning Voice, 5 days a week, five different hosts, five different topics, a little bit of politics spread throughout all. We appreciate you joining in to listen to all of the hosts every day of the week. So continue to do so, please. The purpose of this hour, or now 2 hours, is civic engagement. We're trying to encourage you to get involved. We are a nation bound by shared values of freedom, liberty, and equality. And with that comes some rights and some responsibilities. For some, that includes service to our country and others to our community. Our most sacred right is that right to vote. And we should all take that serious. And I'll tell you, 25% in the latest city to Tucson turnout.
The final number?
Is not an impressive number for us as citizens.
The
we
ballot
need to do better.
To your house, you just have to mark. You have to mark like one, well, less than five things, depending on where you lived, but probably less than five things for everybody.
And it's really interesting on that front for those of you who believe that, well, voting in the city of Tucson doesn't make a difference. I can't make a difference. My vote doesn't really count because either the partisanship's diverse. I'll tell you what. If 50% of the people who didn't vote from the other side of the aisle or the independents who wanted to see change, they could have impacted it this time. Mm-hmm. So that is one of our most sacred rights. But today is a day that we do reflect, and thank you, Matt, for the shout out on that, on those who have served our country, those the veterans. Veterans Day and Memorial Day is always a tough thing for those of us who serve, because quite often you'll have people come up to you on Memorial Day and say, thank you for your service. And happy Memorial Day. What sometimes we forget, Memorial Day was established to honor those who died in the service of our country. And it's always tough when you meet somebody because you want to say thank you, you know, appreciate it. And you don't want to lecture. Sometimes it's hard not to say, this is the day we remember all those who gave their lives. And Memorial Day really is that. Veterans Day is the day for us to remember all the people that serve in our country. That's and right. Thank them for it. Now, ironically, Matt, it started as Armistice Day in 1919, the day commemorating the end of World War I on November 11th. And it became a national holiday. It didn't become a national holiday till 1938, because the first day, it was Armistice Day. And then it was a year later that Woodrow Wilson declared the day Armistice Day officially to recognize the end of the war and sacrifice all those who served. It actually didn't become a national holiday until 26 when Congress passed a resolution for its annual observance. And then in 1938, officially became a legal holiday to honor veterans of World War I. But now it's to honor all of our veterans. And that change occurred after World War II and the Korean War. I think the country started recognizing that this may occur more often than we'd like it to. A push began to expand the day to honor all veterans. And so in 1954, Congress replaced Armistice with veterans in the name. And President Dwight D. Eisenhower actually signed the legislation to make it officially Veterans Day on June 1st, 1954. So now, November 11th, we celebrate Veterans Day. So thank you to all those who are serving overseas or stateside, and for all those who have served in the past, it's a great day to sit back and remember. And our theme of a lot of our conversation today, Matt, will be around Veterans Day. Not all of it. You can't get away from Tuesdays without having some political conversation. Mm-hmm. So in the second hour, Supervisor Steve Christie will be joining me, and we'll have a great conversation all over the place. But in this first hour, after our first break, you already mentioned and teased that Danette Bewley, the president CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, will be calling in. And I'm hoping that in that first segment with her, her dad, Captain Jack Bewley, United States Navy retired, a naval aviator who served in both the Cuban Missile Crisis and I say fought in both the Cuban Missile Crisis and the Vietnam Wars, hoping he'll be able to join us. This weekend, great congratulations to Michael and Bonnie Quinn and all those involved with Rockin' for Heroes.
Oh, my goodness.
It was once again a great show and a great recognition. And thank you to the four heroes organizations they support through
Veterans,
Rockin' for Heroes.
Active duty military, first responders, and Gold Star families.
And all those all of those different groups were recognized and present in Oro Valley this weekend. I want to thank you, Matt, for being up there representing 1030 The Voice, KVOI as well.
Yeah.
You and Brandon Croft were up there. And,
yeah, me and Brandon, we held it down, man. So, yeah, we had a great time. We talked a lot of engagement with the folks coming through. That was very nice talking to people. I think there may have been a few guest opportunities being arranged between Ben Bueller Garcia and Kathleen there talking to people and realizing they had some great stories on their hands. So it was a wonderful day and a good community, just a sense of celebration and appreciation in a community setting, right? So we just, everybody turned out in the region and just to have a pleasant afternoon celebrating and thanking.
And to say thank you.
Yeah.
And that the whole event started when the Quinns lost their son and they wanted to do something to thank the first responders who had helped him through the later stages of his cancer and his fight. And it really was that simple. They wanted to say thank you. And now 5 years later, the Fifth Rockin' for Heroes has expanded not only who they're thanking, how they thank them, and it really is a great, you said it, community event, a great opportunity. Captain Bewley was recognized. It's become a tradition at Rockin' for Heroes, and I've been honored to have the opportunity to help them in that recognition of veteran or veterans who have served. We've had World War II veterans, we've had Korean War veterans, and this year they recognized Captain Jack Bewley, who's a resident of Oro Valley. He's a local. And for being a man who's 90 years old, he was incredibly fit and incredibly good shape. Mm. And it's just great when you see some of these veterans and you talk to them about what their service looked like, what they did for their country, and you get them talking, and you see them glow.
Mm-hmm.
You see them remember some things that were hard, but that they now can look back on and say, I was part of that. And more importantly, what Captain Bewley stressed to me multiple times was, it's a team effort. It's never just one person.
Right.
It's all those that serve. It's everybody supporting. It's the Army supporting, the Navy and the Air Force and the Marines. It's all of them. And so today is Veterans Day, a great opportunity. If you've got folks in your families, if you've got friends and neighbors, and you want to step out, please make sure you thank them for their service. It is the day that Congress and the country has set aside to recognize those veterans.
It's wonderful. And thanks for all the part that you played. You were, I don't know if you were officially the master of ceremonies, but you
I leave that to Dana Cooper. He did a phenomenal job.
You certainly played a great role in setting up the afternoon. And by the way, not only was the Lexington Lab Band fantastic. Oh,
they always are.
The mariachi group that they had opening up, they did play a set. And I was told by the Rockin' for Heroes folks, Kim and Mary and Bonnie, when you hear these guys, they're going to play the national anthem and it'll send a shiver down your spine. It just did. They were so good hearing these young adults or teenagers. I don't know what the span of the group is. To hear them play the national anthem, it was a stunning rendition of the national anthem.
It was truly amazing.
And with local flavor, right?
And Dana Cooper even said, he goes, I've heard that it was going to be incredible, but it was just truly amazing. And a local flavor and a touch. Yeah. You know, I personally love the words to our anthem, but sometimes when you just play the sounds and you know the words and they're in your brain, it really does hit you in a different manner.
It just had a lot of soul, you know, it just had the soul of the community. And but so thank you for all the work you put into kind of introducing people and kind of helping tell the story of why we were there.
I think there's a lot of people that want to continue to have that event grow and continue to support. And it was great to see so many different members of the community. And the lab band brings, I mean, the music is always phenomenal. That's one of the highlights of the show. After the actual saying thanks and the recognition, Chief Riley from Oro Valley was recognized as a first responder. Yep. We had a Gold Star family member. She had lost some local here, her son in Iraq, if I recall. And the thing is, there were multiple Gold Star family members out there, all wanting to share their story and tell you about their sons or daughters who served and paid the ultimate price. And they haven't, they've embraced it. And that's something about the Gold Star families that truly is amazing. So
a woman came by the tent, and she's been actually on 1030 The Voice talking about the issue of veteran suicide. She brought her son with her, clearly a teenager. He's wearing a Civil Air Patrol. So she served, right? And her son is...
She's West Point grad.
Yeah, and her son's in the Civil Air Patrol.
And he wants to go into the Air Force
just
and fly.
So, yeah, just... There's just a lot of gratitude from the community towards people that are willing to put on the uniform and willing to represent our country. And you know, you're making a big commitment up to and including your life when you do that.
And events like that can only be put on with the support of the community.
Yeah.
And if you look, 1030 Voice was there. There were multiple media stations there. There were nonprofits. There was a little bit of everybody there. There was a lot of support given to the event that makes it possible for everybody to say thank you. The Quins are amazing. The support team they've got around them are amazing. And Rocking for Heroes was a good way 2 days prior, in between that event on Sunday and today, Veterans Day, what occurred? The 250th birthday of the United States Marine Corps.
There we go.
Yesterday was the 250th birthday. A lot of people don't realize the Army was established 250 years ago. They celebrated their birthday on June 14th. October 13th was the U.S. Navy's first, when they first were created, two ships that were assigned by Congress to disrupt the British supply lines. And then on November 10th, the Continental Marines stood up to engage in the War of Independence, the Revolutionary War. So we've had, our military services have been out there for longer than 250 years, for longer than the nation. Mm-hmm. And next July 4th, when we get the opportunity to celebrate 250 years as the greatest country in the truly self-governed country, whether we realize it or not, mm-hmm. we've got something so unique in this country. We can't forget that. So appreciate everybody who supported that event. Appreciate everybody's support in Veterans Day. And don't forget all the things that have made our country great, and do give us those freedoms. I guarantee you travel around the world, you'll find they don't exist anywhere else other than our country. So with that, we're going to go to a break. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk station, and we'll be right back.
And thank you to all of our veterans listening for your service.
And welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, Matt Neely behind the glass. And sure enough, we are joined right now by Danette Bewley, the president and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, as well as Captain Jack Bewley, her father, who was recognized this weekend at Rockin' for Heroes. Welcome to both of you this morning, and happy Veterans Day.
Thanks, Ted. Same to you.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Well, Captain Bewley, I'm appreciative of having you on the show. It was great to meet you this weekend at Rocking for Heroes. Captain Bewley served his country honorably for nearly 30 years, and after had a distinguished career as a decorated combat fighter pilot and elite aircraft instructor. Captain Bewley, I've got to say, when I did the research to talk about you on Saturday, it was truly amazing to learn of both your service during the Cuban Missile Crisis. I think that's something some people don't remember. We actually had airmen that were flying patrols, and my understanding is you had an encounter, we'll say, with four Russian MiGs, which at that time was something that we hadn't seen for a long time. And then your combat tours in Southeast Asia, over 200 missions over North Vietnam, encountering hostile fire on 168 of those. Thank you for putting yourself at risk to defend our great country. And sir, I'd just like to hear from you of what you remember of those times during the time period where you were facing hostile fire.
Well, when you're in theater, you're very busy because if you have in the Navy, you have collateral duties, and the collateral duties was the flying the airplane, but your primary addition or your primary objective was working with the ship, because you have to work with the people. And my duty was the the squadron's safety officer to make sure that everyone abide by the rules of engagement and also by the just flying regular missions. And so it was two pronged, and I had to watch almost every carrier landing myself up on primary, which was just above the ship. You're looking at all the landings. And so it was in one way it was you had two primary missions, and one was the safety of the aircraft and the safety of the sailors and the Marines that were working around the airplanes. So it was a job that required almost 24 hours a day to accomplish, but it was very worthwhile in that the for a person it was very, very worthy of doing, because you were doing something for the country and you felt that that you couldn't let the country down, because you were defending the accomplishments of the country.
And Captain Bewley, I will say that is incredibly humble. It has always amazed me, especially with naval aviators. Here you're talking about your responsibility for safety, and particularly not only the rule of engagements in time of combat, but you're worried about getting back on deck. It is always amazing to me that so many times y'all talk to a naval aviator and want to hear about the flying and the engagements and the missions you went, and you all tend to come back to that carrier landing on a small piece of a very small tennis court, some people will call it a tennis court in the middle of the water, has to bring your heart rate up. Would you say that the landing or combat, which one got your heart rate the most elevated?
Well, the medical people put little patches on us with a recorder, and our heart rates went up very high when we were on the catapult, because you're going from 0 to 140, 50 miles an hour in about 1.5 seconds, maybe 2 seconds. So that gets your heart rate up. And then when you get shot at, it naturally it goes up very, very high. But the biggest factor was, surprising enough, was coming back in. Our heart rate was so elevated during the carrier approaches that it astonished even the medical professionals, because they didn't think it would be our attention would be that high. But it is, because everything has to be precise, because you're landing on a ship that's moving in 10 degrees differently than you are, and it's dragging the runway system with you. So you're constantly landing in a slight bank until the last few seconds, and when you can level the wings and engage. You also have to fly an exact 3.5-degree glide path and while maintaining a constant airspeed that's constant with the maximum amount of weight that you can have landing on a carrier. So it's very critical. All these things are critical, and particularly in our time, because everything, excuse me, everything was done automatically or done manually. And particularly night carrier landings, when you can't see anything, that's the toughest one. I don't, particularly in weather when the ship is bouncing around, and I have a few of those ones that keep me up at night thinking about them. And then you're in the middle of the ocean, there's no place to go.
That sir, that is true. Your spare runway is nowhere close. It's just amazing to me that for all the activity and the time you've had in combat, over 200 missions again, and 168 where you were being shot at, your aircraft was damaged. But the real excitement of being a naval aviator is coming back and landing on that ship moving forward.
Yeah, well, we call it mother, home to mother.
that is true. You need that when you come back. So we've got about another minute before we have to go to our first break, sir. Is there any specific mission that you remember over Vietnam that you'd like to share about?
Well, on the second trip out, we had I'm trying to. I had so many missions that were under fire that I'm trying to recall something that was
Sir, it's okay. It's okay. What we can do is let's. We're going to go to a break here in about 20 seconds. Okay. When we come back, I'd love to have a couple more questions with you. And I know our audience is going to want to hear from your daughter, Danette Bewley, who runs Tucson Airport Authority and is the greatest proponent of fly local, support local, and fly Tucson. And it's going to be a busy weekend, and there's still a lot going on in the government. So we'd like to talk to you both when we come back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk station. That's Captain Jack Bewley and his daughter, Danette. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I can now stand down from standing at attention with that song, and we will go on. Thank you, Matt, for playing all the service songs. With me right now is Captain Jack Bewley and Danette Bewley, his daughter, who runs the Tucson Airport Authority. Captain Bewley, one last thought. One of the things that I was so impressed with meeting you on Sunday and again hearing from you today is you always have turned the conversation back to it being about the team, about everybody. And I wanted to thank you for that. 30 years is a long time in a career. You obviously had multiple leadership memories, but what it appears that you value the most was your service with others. So I want to thank you for that.
Well, very good, but we are a team. We have to work together because no one is the top dog. We have the people who are down working on airplanes, the ground handlers, everybody works together as a complete team, and it's teamwork that makes an aircraft carrier successful. Because if without the teamwork, without everybody doing their job as best as they possibly can, it fails. The machine stops down, and that goes down to the lowest ranked person aboard the ship, and it's a tremendous responsibility for a young person, particularly out of high school or out of college, that just to get the responsibility that their job is totally responsible for the event that's occurring to happen. And I have one little thing that comes to my mind is we call it the dance of death. And that's when they fire a SAM at us, or a surface-to-air missile at us. And sometimes you can see it come off the launch pattern because there's a big flume down there. You have about maybe 6 seconds before it hits you. And so your mind goes through a whole lot of effects at that time. And we developed a system of evading them, and that was to roll the airplane sharply in a direction of the launch and go for the deck and hope that the missile doesn't hit you as it goes by. They can change the trajectory of the missile from the ground, but there's so few seconds that you're talking about, maybe six to around 6 seconds, and it's quite an event when they fire one at you. It kind of wakes you up.
Yeah, waking you up is one way to put it, sir. There's no doubt. I think what you just described is those reactions have to be instinctive. And
it can't be practiced. You've got to do it and save yourself. And so it's not a daunting task, but it's you have to be aware of it. And it's just one of the things that we had to encounter doing there. And it was a it's got my heart rate up right now just thinking about it.
Well, it's sir, I appreciate you sharing that with us, especially as a old fighter pilot. I like hearing about other fighter pilot stories when on those kind of moments. Speaking of stories, go ahead, sir.
I've got one last story to tell you. I was born left-handed, but you have to fly an airplane with your right hand. Well, but I was an athlete all the way through my high school and college years, so I was used to using both hands. And on one occasion, they fired a large, it wasn't a bullet, it was a big, well, it was a about a between 180 to a 200 millimeter cannon shot, and I could see a little bit about it, the smoke from the firing of it, and the instinct is to turn the airplane as skinny as you possibly can. In other words, make the airplane look, the airframe is as thin as possible. You don't want it to be flat, because if you're flat, they have a larger area to hit. So you roll to almost a perpendicular to a 90 degree position. And on this particular occasion, I rolled the opposite way, which was difficult to do if you're right-handed. And the bomb burst underneath the airplane, wiping out a lot of the aircraft features. And I had a little difficult time getting back to the ship with low fuel and fragments of my airplane gone. So it was probably the most dangerous situation I had over there.
That was what that.
Now I'd like to introduce to you my daughter, who I think is very, very successful. Danette, take it away.
Your daughter, Captain Jack, is a asset and a treasure to the community, and she's an incredibly proud daughter of you.
Well, thank you very much. But I'm just as proud of her accomplishments as I am of thinking of some things I've done. And she's a wonderful lady.
She's definitely making her impact on aviation. So Danette Bewley, the president and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, how's this weekend been listening to your father have these kind of opportunities to talk?
You know, it's always inspiring to hear, you know, the leadership stories that he shares, and also, you know, the stories of flying the actual missions. You know, that's the stuff you see in the movies. You know, that's the stuff of the quote unquote Top Gun stuff. But I really think the leadership and the teamwork and the lessons learned in that arena are just as valuable as hearing, you know, the heroic stories of the flying. And I'm always in amazement of anyone who does that, you know, whether it was back in Vietnam or whether it's today in theater across the world. It's just so impressive.
It's one of those things that there's no doubt any successful mission has hundreds of people's fingerprints on it, because everybody is part of the team when they serve in the military.
Yeah. You know, these are lessons that I take to heart that, you know, just come through osmosis over the years of just being in the military family. Is that's the same kind of leadership I bring to the Tucson Airport Authority. Everyone's important. Everyone has a role. And if we don't do our role correctly, things don't go well. And, you know, I pride myself on when people come to the airport, they have a seamless experience. They don't notice anything. Well, that means we're doing our job. It's when they notice things or things aren't going well that we've fallen short. So our team does everything we can to really focus on safety, security, and customer service, just to make sure that we're delivering the best experience that we possibly can so people choose to fly Tucson.
Well, and that's the key point. This community needs to support our airport. We need to fly Tucson, and you make it easy to make that decision. So I want to thank you for joining us today. Captain Buehle, thank you for your service, and thank you for all your time. Danette, I'd love to have you back before the holiday season so we can talk TAA.
Absolutely. Happy to do so. And happy Veterans Day.
Thank you, and thank you both. And I know you're off to another speaking engagement, Captain Buehle. You'll make an impact on those kids at Bush Ridge High School as well. So you're listening.
Well, I hope to.
No, sir, I guarantee you will. Your presence sends a message to many. So thank you both. Have a great day. Happy Veterans Day. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back with USAA. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxray, host, Matt Neely behind the glass. So far, keeping me on time, on target, and it's been a busy day today doing it. Incredible
already.
Incredible interview with Captain Jack Buehle, a United States Navy retiree and a naval veteran with a lot of combat experience. So that was great to hear some of those stories. So we are joined today by Major General retired Bob Labruda and by Gina Sacedo Herrera from USA. I'm a proud 45-year member of USA, and I appreciate you both joining us today. Thank you for coming on The Morning Voice.
Thank you, Ted.
Thank you for your membership.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I was insured before I became a member, thanks to my father's service in the Army, and I want to reach out to my dad and let him know that we're thinking about him, and wish him a happy Veterans Day above. But we appreciate you both joining us today, because there is a big announcement coming out of USA. And could you tell us about that?
Jenny, you want to start?
Sure, yeah. You know, USAA, as you know, has been advocating for service members for over a century, but this Veterans Day, we're taking that to the next level by launching Honor Through Action. It's a national movement that aims to transform the lives of military families, focused on three key areas: meaningful careers, financial security, and overall well-being, and anchored by USAA's $500 million financial commitment.
So it's a big announcement, and there's a lot going on. How did this initiative initially come about?
Well, last year, quite frankly, before I start here, Ted, I just want to do the same thing. I want to all the 16 million plus veterans that are out there, happy Veterans Day. And to all the families that sacrificed so they could serve, happy Veterans Day to you as well. As you know, USAA has been after this. We've got 14 million members, but over a century, we've been focused in on making sure that we're providing them with trusted advice, financial security, making sure that everything they need from products and taking care of their way of life is what we're all about. But last year, we initiated something called Beyond Thanks. As you very well know as a veteran yourself, it's wonderful to receive that thanks. But we believe that we can do more, and that's what this is putting action behind those words. And more than that, we're putting resources behind those actions in those three key areas that Jenna just discussed to make sure that we ensure that our veterans not only live, not only survive, but thrive when they get on this side of the fence lines.
General LaBaruta, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that your career is what I call the consummate career of service. You enlisted in the Air Force in 1981. You later earned your commission as a distinguished graduate of the Air Force ROTC program at Southwest Texas State University in May of 89. And then you became joined the officer corps. 38 years you served, and your final position was as the Director of Military Force Management Policy, Deputy Chief of Staff for Manpower, Personnel, and Services at Headquarters Air Force. You had a heck of a career, and now you're continuing to serve veterans. You led and mentored them, and now you're continuing to serve them. So I want to say thank you for all you're doing for all of our veterans as well.
Well, thank you, Ted. You know, I was blessed with a wonderful career because of great leaders, great folks that I work with. And as you very well know, when that comes to an end, it did for me in 2019, you're kind of like an island by yourself. And so what I found through that is that, you know, I've got some great folks on this side of the fence line that helped me understand that the transition does not discriminate. It impacts all of us. You can't put that many years into something with passion and heart and not have the impacts of it. And so that's why I'm so honored to be part of this initiative, is because what we're doing is making sure that we give soft landings to those folks that are actually transitioning out of the military and joining the civilian sector once again. These three areas, these pillars regarding careers, financial security, and of course the members' well-being are right on target, as you say. And I'm telling you, especially with a $500 million commitment over the next 5 years, this is monumental. And it's a call to action for every segment of our society, public, private, and nonprofit as well.
There's no doubt that this investment is needed and needs to make a difference. Let's talk about the careers for a little bit. Transitioning out of the from the military to the civilian workforce, for you and I, it went pretty smoothly. Our careers helped us. We found things that we could do, engage, we're still involved. But for many, it's not quite that successful. Fewer than one in five transitioning service members aren't really feeling prepared when they get out there, and quite often they don't even last a year in their first job out. But the thing that this is also addressing, I want to point out, is people don't understand military spouses have a hard time moving around, supporting their service members, supporting their families, and it's very difficult. It is service in and of itself, and quite often the spouses remains four times higher unemployment rate than their counterparts in the civilian world.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I love that you're diving into the data here, because that's what we were seeing. You know, organizations like USAA and so many others have done great work on the military affiliate hiring front and certainly investing in military nonprofits, but these challenges continue to persist. And so you mentioned it, right? Military spouse unemployment is north of 20% today, and it has stayed at that level for some time. In addition to that, you know, only 36% of currently serving feel financially secure today, right? That is not a great environment for our service members. And USAA, we wanted to do something about it, and we believe that we as an organization are uniquely positioned to not only invest in the systemic change and to drive that type of change, but also to invite others in corporate America to walk alongside us.
So, one, I want to again thank you for that piece, and especially addressing the spousalist issue. No one that serves men, any of the men or the women who have served, could not do it without spouses that support their service and serve as well. So thank you for addressing that. How can the veterans and their families access this assistance? I mean, it's a lot of money doing some three critical pillars. How can those members of the military be exposed to this?
Yeah, for now, I would encourage all of your listeners to check out our website, usaa.com/Veterans Day, to learn more about Honor Through Action and how we're celebrating veterans, not just today, but every day throughout the year, and also to learn more about some of those core programs. You know, at the end of the day, there are different nonprofits that your listeners might be familiar with today. And USAA, yes, we'll quarterback, yes, we'll invest through Honor Through Action. But the idea is that we help these service providers better target and scale the work that they're already doing today. So you can certainly find out more at our website, on our social media channels, but also continue to go to those nonprofits that you feel comfortable with, because USAA will be supporting them behind the scenes.
So, General LaBaruta, as the Vice President of Survivorship, and what do you what area of this new program do you really want to highlight and make sure that people, that the veterans are aware of?
Well, I love all three pillars, but that final pillar about our members' well-being and their families' well-being, I'm honored to have the opportunity to lead this function for USAA. And what it is, Ted, is that I've got like the casualty affairs team for USAA, so that if a member or a family member of a member pass away, which is going to happen to all of us, it's my team that goes in to make sure that we're taking care of their affairs within USAA to make sure that they're back on the step and do everything we can to provide them the care and the support and the service that they need. And not only need, but we deliver because, you know, they deserve it and they've earned it through the service of this great nation. And so, yeah, it's a valuable contribution. There's nothing like it other than in the Department of Defense. And again, I'm honored to have the opportunity to be part of it.
Jen, as Vice President of Corporate Impact at USA, any final thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I want to dive deeper into the well-being pillar because the general went there. And specifically plug our Face the Fight initiative that we launched 2 years ago. Now we have over 250 coalition partners, and we're on track to save over 6,500 lives. So Face the Fight is all about destigmatizing what it means for our veterans to ask for help. We want to ultimately eradicate veteran suicide. We know that is a big and tall order. But we've got to have the conversations, and I appreciate you inviting us on to talk more about the challenges, certainly, but also the opportunities, because, again, it is Veterans Day. This is a celebration of all those who have served and their families who supported their service, but we have such an opportunity to continue to provide the appropriate support required for our veterans to thrive.
Well, Jenna, Major General LaBruta, appreciate you both joining us today. Appreciate all USA's doing to help our veterans, and best of luck with Honor Through Action.
Thank you, General.
All right. Thank you both. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We will be right back after the top of the hour break. Good morning and welcome back. It is Veterans Day, November 11th. It's just after 8 o'clock. We've had one heck of a show already, Matt. Those interviews, both with USA and all that they care about trying to fix and help and support and provide service to the veterans. $500 million commitment through their new Honor Through Action. The conversation with the Buleys, Captain Jack Buley and his daughter, Danette Buley.
Wow.
Wow. That's the easiest way to say it. And then I turn around and I see my favorite supervisor sitting on the couch ready to come in and talk about all things. We're joined by Supervisor Steve Christie. Thank you for joining me. I believe this might be the first time. I know it's the first time you're on the Morning Voice. I think I may have had you on Jumpin' Tucson, but this is the first time with Morning Voice. So thank you for being here this morning.
Oh, it's great to be here, and it's great to be with you, and also to thank you, General Maxwell, for your service of many, many decades to our country. We are so appreciative of all you've done, not only for the service end, but for our community here in Tucson with your involvement. So thank you for your service, and thank you for your commitment to our community.
Well, I appreciate that. And as you know, on Tuesdays, we talk about civic engagement and getting people involved. And you and your family have been engaged and involved for a long time. We all care about this community. But as I understand, some of your family also has served. So Veterans Day, you want to tell us a little bit about the service history that in your family?
It's a great story. My mother's father, my grandfather, was a West Point graduate, class of 1912. He was a senior.
Did you say 1912?
1912. Wow. 1912. He was a contemporary of Dwight Eisenhower. They played football together. My grandfather was a few years older. There was an incident where Eisenhower was a really budding upcoming football player and had basically a pro career waiting for him. But he busted up his knee. And the story about my grandfather is that he kind of shepherded Eisenhower through that process and helped him get his, so to speak, his legs back on the ground. And he kind of had no choice other than to pursue the military career. And, of course, we all know what General Eisenhower did, but that whole era was known as the classes of falling stars, because there were a tremendous amount of generals that turned out from that era MacArthur and Bradley and a whole host of World War II heroes, particularly, as well as World War I.
Well, you think about it, their timing, I mean, 1912, you know, somewhere between 5 and 7 years of service when World War I was taking place. Mm-hmm. And then they rolled over, and if they stayed in the military, their careers and through progression and leadership were coming up to the apex when we entered World War II.
Exactly. And prior to World War I, my grandfather served with Black Jack Pershing.
Oh, wow.
And went over the Rio Grande after Pancho Villa, who was conducting raids into Columbus, New Mexico. And the President Wilson sent Black Jack Pershing down to do expeditionary campaigns against Pancho Villa. And I always laugh because downtown is a monument to Pancho Villa. You know, they had that statue. And I'm thinking, gee, this guy probably took a few shots at my grandfather, and thank God he missed. Otherwise, a whole bunch of us wouldn't be here.
Oh, no doubt.
But then he went on and served in World War I in France, and then had a career with the Army. He served as the base commander of Fort Bliss in El Paso, and unfortunately, when he was about 42 and still in the Army after World War II, in about 1928, I think it was, he and my grandmother were on a trip to a resort up in northern Mexico, and on their way back, they were going down a mountain pass, and there was a very severe snowstorm that just popped up, and they hit an ice patch and spun and then went over the cliff, and both were killed instantly.
Oh, that's terrible.
And my mother and her two sisters were orphaned and raised by other family members, but I think that if my grandfather had lived, he would have been maybe not a MacArthur or an Eisenhower or a Bradley, but some lower lender like Beetle Smith or something like that you know.
Yeah, I think you said it. He had demonstrated his ability to serve and lead just with what he even did for Eisenhower back at West Point.
Mm-hmm.
And then he obviously demonstrated his capacity in the raids and pushing Pancho Villa at that time back into Mexico and out of our country. So we forget that quite often people's career are cut short because of tragedy. Mm-hmm. And you never know what the top would have been for him.
Yeah, the accident was a freak accident, and it could have, had he been able to avoid it with my grandmother, you never know what heights he might have gone as the World War II progressed to itself.
It shows the strength, though, of your mother and others to persevere through that.
Yeah, my mother was 9 years old, and her older sister was 12, and her younger sister was 4. So it was a really tough age, and they had to deal with that. And both my grandparents are buried at Arlington. So whenever I go to Washington, I always make a point to stop and visit their gravesite. And my daughter just happened to be there for some business a couple of years ago, and she made a point to go out and visit the graves of my grandparents. So that was a real special moment for us too.
I strongly encourage folks to go by Arlington.
Oh, it's
if you've never seen it, don't understand the magnitude, and you don't understand the impact. And as somebody who served for 34 years, when my wife's father, or stepfather-in-law, when Al Kahneman passed away, rest his soul, and happy Veterans Day to him up in heaven. His service, he was buried at Arlington.
He's interred at Arlington as well.
And it was, you cannot explain how proud it makes you feel of our country, mm-hmm. and how we respect those who serve and what they do, but also the sacrifices made at Arlington.
Yeah, exactly.
So if there is a chance for anybody to go there, I strongly encourage it.
Absolutely. And my father served in World War II in the Army. He was sent to Okinawa as mop-up after the Okinawa battle, and was discharged in 1946 as a first lieutenant. And then my stepdad, Ed Galloway, who owned the dealership that I eventually took over, he was a hump pilot. And the Burma-India-Chinese Theater got the Distinguished Flying Cross. And I just read a book on the hump pilots, or what they called the aluminum row, because the planes that they flew were heavily aluminum, and there were numerous crashes going over the hump, which was the Himalayas, to give supplies, American supplies to the Chinese army to fight the Japanese, and it was just treacherous flying.
Over that those altitudes,
no
particularly in those days, no instruments. Like you said, aluminum lightweight, so very susceptible to small arms fire and other issues that could, quite the.
I don't think I could have the mental, moral, or physical courage to get behind one of these planes that did not have very good safety records.
Aviation was still in its infancy back then.
And here they were going over 22,000 feet or 29,000 feet, whatever, in a snowstorm and a blinding blizzard, carrying supplies. It was really, and both my stepdad and my dad never spoke of their service. I had to pry them. I noticed that as a running thread through most.
So there is, you hit a spot there, and there's a program called the Veterans Heritage Project that was started here in Arizona that actually gets veterans to talk about their stories. And they've interviewed pilots, they've interviewed naval officers, they've interviewed the reserve unit out of Tucson that fought in the Chosin Valley in Korea. Incredible stories, and they've put those in it. And what tends to be the truth, I spoke at one when they were rolling out the new book, because it goes into the Library of Congress, and families were there. I had so many families that come up to me and go, we never knew that about my dad. He wouldn't talk about it with the families, but when a 16 or 17-year-old kid showed interest in wanting to hear their stories, they would open up and put that, and eventually put that out in print. And the impact it had on those teenagers is just as impactful as the impact it has on everybody else when we hear those kind of stories. So thank you for sharing your family stories with us. We're going to go to a break a little early here because I want to come back and talk about your commitment to the community and some of the service you've done both before and since becoming a supervisor for Pima County Board of Supervisors. So that's the voice of Steve Christie, and we will be back after this break. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely behind the glass doing an outstanding job as always. And our guest right now is Supervisor representing District 4 on the Pima County Board of Supervisors, Supervisor Steve Christie. Steve, first, before I let you tell your story that you want to finish
just,
with,
just
are you glad to be a supervisor?
I love being a supervisor, and I'm going to tell you that several more times during the interview. But
the
one little quick tidbit of a story. In 1956, my aunt got a phone call from the White House. And it was from President Eisenhower's office. He was going to be in Tucson campaigning for re-election, and that he was requesting my aunt to meet him on the tarmac at the Tucson International Airport, which was just a few hangars and a runway.
Almost nothing back then.
Back in 1956, and there's a great Jack Schaefer photo. He was a great photojournalist for the Citizen. And he took the picture of my aunt walking out to the tarmac and being greeted by President Eisenhower. And he said a few words to her. He said, I just want to express my condolences over the death of your father. He was a good friend of mine at West Point, and I wanted to make sure I said hi to you and had some words with you here in Tucson while I was campaigning. So that's kind of a nice postlude to the whole epic.
It's amazing. Sometimes we think about how big the country is, how diverse, how different it is, yet there's so many connections, and we've had so many today just talking about Dwight D. Eisenhower, which started with your family story. So again, appreciate you sharing that. I do need to make one correction. The Veterans Heritage Project has actually been renamed Imprints of Honor, and it's a high school program. So these interviews are put on by and run by high school, some dedicated, teachers and other folks who are involved in making this happen. But it's the high school kids themselves that are the ones that do the outreach and interviews.
What a great legacy
and write their reports
for our veterans to have that opportunity.
No, it is truly amazing. So this program is about community service, and you've definitely done that in spades. And you're currently supervisor Steve Christie, Pima County Board of Supervisors. But the fact of the matter is you've been involved in this community since long before. First off, can you tell everybody what brought you to Tucson, how you stayed here, and kind of your lead up? And I'll make sure I hit some of the highlights if you leave them out, of the things that you accomplished before deciding to run for supervisor.
Well, I came to Tucson because I had no choice. I was born here. And my parents moved from Ohio in 1950 with so many other post-war families making a new start in Tucson. And I was born in 1954. And shortly after I was born, my parents divorced, and my mother stayed in Tucson with me, and later, 3 years later, remarried to Ed Galloway, who was a local Jeep dealer. And that was when I was barely three. So I was raised by my stepdad and mother. I went through Sam Hughes School and Mansfield Junior High, and 1 year to Greenfield School. And then I wanted to see what it was like to live with my dad, who had returned to Ohio after he and mother divorced. And I just wanted to see what it was like to live with my dad. So I moved to Ohio, went to a prep school in Toledo, and from there I went on to American University in Washington, D.C., and I graduated with a degree in, guess what, political science, which probably I didn't need to do for any particular reason, but in any event, I did.
It sounded good at the time.
Yeah, and that back then it was just important to get the parchment. You know, that was all. So
that is true.
But every summer I would come back to Tucson, and I worked at my stepdad's, what back then was an American Motors dealership. They used to sell Ramblers. I don't know if you remember them at all.
Oh, yeah.
But I found that probably halfway through my college career that what I really wanted to do was to follow my stepdad's footsteps and work at his dealership and eventually take it over, which I did. And after working through all the departments and having all the experiences necessary to understand the business, so I was very fortunate to have that opportunity and that mentorship from my stepdad. And we bought my parents out in 1997, and then we moved out to a new location. We were over on Speedway. And then we moved out to 22nd Street in Pantano, and I renamed it Steve Christie Chrysler Jeep. And around 2006, I could see things were coming to a little bit of a negative situation with Chrysler, because at that time, Mercedes-Benz owned Chrysler. It was called Daimler Chrysler, and that synergy just never worked. And there were a lot of red flags going up that things weren't going well, particularly when Daimler Chrysler decided to sell are put up for sale all of the United States dealerships, the Dodge, the Jeep, yeah, the Chrysler dealerships. That's not a good sign when your manufacturer wants to sell your franchise. So that was kind of the turning mark for me, and I was able to make the determination from a very aggressive car dealer out of Denver who had just bought out my Dodge competitor up the street a few years before, and I could see when finally Daimler Chrysler had sold off the franchises in the United States, or that whole network of franchises, to a investment group in New York called Cerberus, and they had no idea about the automobile business. And I just, the signals were so strong that if I had the opportunity to sell and get out, now would be the time. And we did just that, made a very good sale for myself as far as monetary situation, and it was made perfect sense. And less than a year later, Chrysler went bankrupt. So my car dealer friends called me Nostradamus.
Your timing was good on that.
Yeah, it was sheer genius on my part.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, but you saw that coming.
But that was a real tough time for our economy, that, and especially for the car business.
Oh, 2008 was a huge thing. You mentioned 2006.
Mm-hmm.
There's another really important thing that happened in 2006, and that was the passage of the Regional Transportation Authority.
Yes.
The first time. And while you may have sold your car dealership, you didn't stop your engagement with the community. I mean, you've been the Tucson New Car Dealership Association president twice. You've been president of Arizona's Automobile Dealers Association. You were actually the chair of the Tucson Metropolitan Chamber.
I was.
At one point, you've been a longtime member of SALC, mm-hmm. although you'll tell us we kicked you out. We didn't kick you out. We just told you as long as you're an elected, you can't come back.
You'll care what kind of company you keep.
you'll all be welcome back. But you've done a lot of service in this community. But you were a big player in getting RTA, the original RTA, passed.
Yes, I served on the original Citizens Advisory Committee, and we met monthly for probably a year, year and a half. And it was really interesting because Steve Farley was very, very pro streetcar and what they called transit, which meant basically buses and bicycles and walking paths and sidewalks and things of that nature. I, on the other hand, being a car dealer, I wanted to get cars from point A to point B much more efficiently and quicker. And my whole goal was to expand the network and improve upon it to accommodate more traffic flow. And Steve was against that, but he wanted the streetcar and buses and things of that nature, which I didn't particularly think was a good investment. So they would sit, the two of us, together in these meetings, and we actually became pretty good friends over the whole thing. But it was such an interesting end to the Citizens Advisory Committee before the whole plan went before the public, because the last day that we had to put this plan together, we were at the DoubleTree Hotel and we were locked in a room, all of the committee and the whole staff, and we were told, you guys got to make a deal now. And for some reason, the deal came down to Steve Farley and I, and he, at this particular point, said, look, here's my proposal. Out of 100% of the pie, of all the revenue that's going to be received from this sales tax directed specifically and only for infrastructure of transportation issues, 28% of it will go to transit. And out of that 28% of it will come the streetcar. That 28% includes the streetcar. But we can only include the streetcar if we get a Tiger grant from the government. And my first reaction was, Tucson getting a Tiger grant for a streetcar? That's not going to happen. And I thought, you know, 28% is a pretty good deal. You know, buses and thing, they have a place. And I thought 28% was fair. So I said, we got a deal. And that was how that whole came out.
And when I first joined SLC pretty early on, I was part of a transportation panel with you and Steve Farley to talk about RTA, the halfway point, and how it's been doing. And that's when I learned that story.
Yeah.
It was Steve Farley and Steve Christie, two diverse thoughts who came together and agreed that this was good.
Yeah, I thought 28%, including the streetcar, and only reliable if we got the Tiger grant. That'll never happen. Deal. So don't take me to Las Vegas.
And the next thing that happened
was the first thing out of the chute was we got the Tiger grant and got the streetcar. Yeah. And I think that was the city's first project.
And for some, I've said it quite a bit, I think the streetcar is in some ways the most visible sign of RTA one,
mm-hmm.
and of the original RTA.
I had to change my perception of that too, because after the streetcar came to fruition, it certainly did a lot to revitalize downtown and to increase property values and interest in commerce and economic development. So, you know, that particular element was one of those things we kind of stepped into, but it seemed to work out all right.
And it's interesting as we lead into that, because in RTA next, it's about 28% again.
Yeah.
That's going for transit. And there's 70 million of that 28% is for a bus rapid transit system,
yeah,
or a high capacity transit system,
yeah,
which is reliant upon having to get a $70 million grant for the federal government. So you see some parallels here,
yeah,
Steve.
Are we going to get the $70 million grant?
Absolutely. So we're going to take a break. We want to come back. I've got a couple questions because they impact me and our region about your service before that, but we will get to talk about some of the issues facing the County Board of Supervisors. That's Steve Christie, Board of Supervisor representing District 4. We'll be right back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice. Stay with us. A lot of good talk to come. Welcome back.
Kind of hard to step on Ray, isn't it?
I know. I didn't want to say welcome back. You gave me the sign, or as I call it here, you gave me the finger, which is just saying...
Index finger, everybody.
I know. let's lead back in, but... I mean, that's a song you can listen to all the time.
Yep.
I mean, it really is. And God has blessed our country. And I know Supervisor Christie, myself, folks in here, I truly believe that we have the greatest country. We don't have our problems. We do. We don't have our warts, but we are about self-rule, opportunity. And that is why so many people in the world still want to come here.
Well said.
So it's a great day. I want to thank everyone for honoring and supporting our veterans today and keep the outreach there. So Steve, before we get into the county stuff, we talked about your role in the RTA one. It was huge. It really was. And like you said, it was a little negotiation, a little deal, quick handshake. We got it. And you and Steve Farley coming together and speaking on it was critical. Talked about your perfect timing on your business, but in 2008, right? Kind of right after you sold the business, right when the economy was in the tank, you were asked by the governor to serve on the state transportation board. And you said yes.
Yeah, that was probably the most eye-opening and impactful part of my career because that was my first venture into public service, basically, out of the private sector. And it was a strange new format that I wasn't used to, but it opened my eyes and gave me a lot of breadth and experience about how plans are put together for transportation items, how they're showcased and how they're presented, and the throughput that they go through, as well as the bidding process and the priority process. And you know, I remember one time in particular, was it probably 2-3 years after I was on the board, the representatives from the ADOT administration came down to Tucson to give me a preview of what the plan was going to be about. And at that particular time, the suggestion was for approval of the plan was no new projects, but all of the funding to go to maintenance. And I said, oh, that's just boring as hell. I said, why? There's no, it's not sexy at all to talk about maintenance. We want to have building bridges and expanding highways and charting new courses and trails. And they kind of went back and warned. They said, you know, we have an asset here. We have to take care of what we have. And if we don't, it's going to deteriorate to the point where it's going to be so cost ineffective to try to go back and remediate what we have. So for 1 year, the suggestion was to do nothing but maintenance, no new projects. We kind of finagled, the board did, you know, we'll do a little bit here, a little bit there. But looking back, I sure see the wisdom in that process. And I know you've been facing that too when you were served.
That is something we're facing right now. I mean, 71%, I think I got that number right, goes just to preservation. So when things like the RTA and RTA Next now come up, it's not just about getting more money so that we can do all these things, because there's no knight in shining armor coming from the state, because there's no money, there's no budget. The feds historically are bad and slow on their reauthorization of transportation funds, and they're both the state and the federal government are very non-reactive to how we should fund this properly.
But didn't we benefit greatly from the Biden administration infrastructure plan and bill?
We did have a lot of benefit that came out of that, but again, it's temporary. Mm-hmm. Not all that stuff. Matter of fact, about
that was the Inflation Reduction Act.
That one too. Yeah. There were several of those bills that were put in temporary status. They helped, I'd say, spur some of the activity in infrastructure. As you know, sitting on that state transportation board, you also then were on the Pima Association and Governments and the Regional Transportation Authority. So you had those two roles down here too. A lot of time, a lot of dedication. You were highly involved at SALC at the time. You were sitting on our board. You were engaged. You may not have had the company any longer, but you are now fully engaged. And I'll remember a conversation we have. You may not remember it. You were frustrated. You were really disappointed with where we were going in this community, and you were ready to move. You talked to me about moving to San Diego, moving back out to California. You were just ready to give up. But then something twisted. Something flickered. You decided, no, I should serve, and I can make a difference. And that's when I remember you stepping up and running for County Board of Supervisors. What What was the logic behind that?
Well, that was 2015, 2016, and my predecessor...
Right after you came off the State Transportation
Yes,
Board.
Yes, it was just a matter of a few months, and it became apparent that my predecessor, Ray Carroll, was not going to run for re-election, and a group of folks, many from SALC and many from the Chamber and many from my former business industry... said, you know, Steve, with your experience in the business community and coming from the business community, we don't have a voice of business on the Board of Supervisors, and you also have experience in the public sector with one of the most keystone elements of Pima County's problems. And if you remember, that was when our road situation, Pima County's roads were in horrible shape. Now, people will say that they still are, but the reality is we've rehabilitated and remediated some 900 miles of county roads since 2000, I believe it's 2020, with our road repair program. And but my point being was that I received a lot of inquiries and a lot of support and suggestions to run, and I did. So that was a great segue from my transportation background, and prior to that, my business background. And I've always been very vocal about the fact that I don't know anything else really other than what it's like to own and operate a business, what it's like to make payroll, what it's like to recruit and train and retain employees, what it's like to culture them to follow a mission that you have in your business, and to have real skin in the game. I always like to tell the story, and it's a true one, about how I know the tiles in my hallway backwards and forwards, because I walked over them many, many times between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. Worrying about my business. And I don't think there's anybody else in city government or county government that has that experience or has ever been in the private sector. And it makes a difference, because I've taken that mindset, at least I've tried to, and presented it at the board level, that there are many elements of running a business that should be incorporated in running a county. And very often I get a lot of resistance because my colleagues just don't have the knowledge or the experience of the business.
Well, not only did those 900 miles of roads get redone, they got redone with that other sales tax, because you're the one vote on the council that is, you've been, speaking of roads, you've been the roadblock to a tax increase.
So to speak.
Right? So if there's a will and you are the limiting factor on a tax increase, thank you. And so then it's like, well, we know we need to fix roads because we've, you know, got $2 billion of deferred maintenance on our roads, or, you know, we have this many dollars worth of roads that are in poor or unsatisfactory condition, failing condition. So, you know, thanks for being a roadblock on there. And when there's a will, there's a way. Oh, all of a sudden they did find money to put it in the budget. They found transportation dollars.
And I think that's a key point that you make right there, Matt, is, yeah, the roadblock on, we don't need to do another half cent. We already have a half cent in the RTA, something
and it's
that you
dedicated,
were behind.
It's dedicated.
Dedicated.
That they can't take away from or add to or modify in any way, shape, or form. It's going to road repair and road infrastructure.
And I think that was important, but you also changed then how we were going to fund road infrastructure in the county.
Mm-hmm.
And we've now gone to a pay-go system.
Mm-hmm.
That, by all appearances, is working.
It is, not as efficiently or as effectively as I would like, because there are still a number of roads in the county, particularly in my district, that still have not even been initially repaired, because a lot of that money that would have gone to that has been had to been drawn back to maintain the roads they already repaired with the PAYGO system. So it's kind of a love-hate situation, but nonetheless, that PAYGO system is the one that really initiated it, because we did accelerate the monies for the first couple of years, and then of course those monies don't show up in the preceding years.
Right.
And then of course it's been 5-6 years. Since this program started, and the roads we fixed 5-6 years ago are needing maintenance and repair now.
Absolutely, and that is one of the changes in the RTA Next Plan. Mm-hmm. Is there is a categorical that will allow you on the major arterial roads, not all the roads in the county, but on major arterial roads, there's funding that can be used for that. And should the revenues come in higher than our pessimistic view, that money will also be allocated towards those. So it gives you an opportunity without raising taxes, because we already have a half cent. This will also be it's not a continuation, it's a new tax, but it will be the same tax rate inside the city of Tucson, or inside the county. And as you've mentioned, it's the half cent that's been there that you supported last time, and I'm hoping you're going to support it this time.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's an important from a selling standpoint, because everybody that I talked to over the last few years, when it comes to the RTA, everybody says, well, can't they put maintenance in there? Can't they have a category for maintenance? And with the wisdom that came out of the current plan, they did do that. And I think that's a very important and effective selling point.
And it's important for people to understand, it's not maintenance to fix potholes.
Right.
It's to redo the roads, 10-year certification on it's the road's viability and lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just to give all the municipalities and the county money to go patch potholes that are going to last a season.
Yeah.
It's to fix the roads, to put them in better shape. And approval of RTA next, Ted's opinion, will give you more strength and opportunity to stick with the PAYGO system that it seems to be working. And we won't raise the overall tax base.
Yeah, it's now in a different category other than PAYGO, a capital improvement program to the CIP. Right. So that's kind of entrenched it. And just to Matt's point, for people who don't know the severity of me being the roadblock, in order to pass a countywide sales tax, you need the full unanimous vote of the Board of Supervisors. All five have to do it. And I know my colleagues are frothing at the mouth to get at that sales tax revenue. They'd have a field day. All that money coming in, so many projects to do, so little time that they would want to do with their favorite projects.
So much land to buy.
So much wealth to redistribute. So I am the only one that's standing in the way of another countywide sales tax. And as long as I'm on the board, that'll never happen.
And there are still a lot of people out there, Steve, that say it's okay to vote no on RTA next because there's Plan B, which is going to be this county sales tax. And I keep reminding them, Steve Christie's on this board. And he loves transportation. He loves roads. But
unsafeguarded sales tax.
Well said.
Where they can spend whatever they want on it. They can start off.
They can
off.
Move it around.
They can start off on roads. They can start off and say, oh, we'll do roads in 6 months, 8 months from now. You know what? We don't really need to do roads after all. Let's do more public housing. Or let's do more. Well, I'm sorry to bring up peeps to you, Ted. But
I understand. We are early childhood education supporters. But we've run long on this section, so we're going to go to a break here. I want to remind everybody there is a Veterans Day parade this morning that will start at 11 o'clock down in Alameda downtown, circle its way around the downtown area, then finish kind of where it starts right there at Alameda and Congress in that area. So please, if you've got something to do, go down and support the veterans and show the dedication to them for this Veterans Day. And I want to give Ben Bueller Garcia the credit for that. He reminded me of it. So we're going to a break. It's 10:30 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. When we get back, we will talk more intricacies on the current status of the County Board of Supervisors and an upcoming joint meeting with the Tucson City Mayor and Council. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice, and Matt Naley with that little lead-in.
You're not going to hear the finale of Kate Smith?
Well, we can. Here we go.
That's as old school as it gets right there.
That is. And for me, it flashed back immediately to the Philadelphia Flyers, the mm-hmm. Broadway Bullies, the goons on the ice who were winning, you know, with the, you know, Bobby Clark, Teethless Bobby Clark, Dave Schultz, all the big Broadway Bullies. And every time they were playing in the Stanley Cup, that was who was singing on the ice at the end.
They put up a statue to her.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And Supervisor Christie, as you started playing that, he's just going, I could... got goosebumps. That's, you know, songs.
What is that, about 1938 or 1935 or something like that?
I don't know if it was that far back.
Yeah, Roosevelt was president.
So. I mean, the song may have been, but Kate Smith's rendition.
I don't know. Roosevelt said, "You are America" to her.
Yeah. Yep.
1938.
Wow. You nailed it. You nailed
1938.
It. 1938. Well, so let's talk a little bit about your situation on the Board of Supervisors? You obviously have kind of a diverse, you had support at some times in the past by having another Allie Miller on as a Republican, but you've always been on the minority, which for a business leader is not always easy to go into a decision-making situation, have that minority. And right now, you're the lone Republican on the Board of Supervisors, but you're still managing to create some allies and some work. What can you kind of talk about your situation and how you approach it?
Well, there's been instances where there's been common ground with some of my colleagues. I have to say, I have issues with trying to create common ground, because what collaboration on certain issues can you possibly come up with? Because we're so diverse and so separated and polarized on these issues that there's just not there's not any room to get gather. But when Sharon Bronson was on the board, there were several moments when we were able to swing the other colleagues onto our side on a number of issues. And every once in a while, even on this current board, for instance, the support of Project Blue and maybe a handful of other ones. But every once in a while, you can. And it's up to me to try to identify those times, recognize those times, and act upon those times, even though they're far and few in between. But I have to be perfectly frank and honest. The way we are on that board, there is such a wide gulf of ideology and political beliefs that it's very difficult to find that ability to put a bridge over that chasm, because we're so far apart on issues.
Yeah, if you want to listen to more of Steve Christie, all you have to do is hang out for Wynn Tucson, as he will be Kathleen Wynn's guest immediately after this. And tomorrow morning, please tune in for Grant Krueger with the Morning Voices. He'll have another veteran, Dave Rufus with Combat Coffee Beans, going to come on and talk about his service as well as others. So we appreciate that. So we've got about a minute left. You've got an upcoming joint meeting with the city of Tucson.
Yeah, won't that be fun?
So what's your expectation?
It's going to be one of these, I think they're going to gingerly start the meeting and throw out a couple of, I'll be off to the side with a bag of popcorn, quite frankly. This is going to be great theater. But they're going to kind of gently tiptoe into some issues, and as they get deeper and deeper into certain those issues, the more raucous and difficult things will be. And I think that's what's really going to make it an interesting event, and I can't wait.
Well, it's definitely being looked towards. There's been some both Mayor Romero and Board Chair Scott have been pretty vocal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they
and,
have.
I know they had a great meeting leading up to this.
And this is one of the areas where I can collaborate with Chair Scott. We don't often do that. But I think he articulated the issues between the city and the county very well, and I support his comments. And let's see how that all takes place at the city council and supervisors joint meeting.
Well, we'll be all tuning in for that show. Maybe get some popcorn as well. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Join us next week. We look forward to it, and stay tuned.